Good morning, Professor.
Morning, James.
So I guess a good way to start this interview would be talking about a briefing note that was produced by Australia's Defence Department saying that the Australian military wants to focus on peacekeeping training for the Tatmadaw. So in light of the allegations of ethnic cleansing, what do you make of this statement from the Defence Department?
Well, it's straight out of the manual. If you go back and have a look at the Defence White Paper, the last one was in 2016, and there are a whole range of partners leaving this sort of assistance, and some of them, for example, Thailand, where there's a military government, the Philippines, Duterte, himself fairly controversial for his attitude towards extrajudicial killings.
Yes.
Vietnam, which is a communist state, and we tend to be a bit selective in the way we condemn those. Pakistan, which is also receiving assistance on counter-terrorism, and that is in some ways linked to terrorist organisations, and of course a heavy involvement with the situation in Afghanistan. So essentially what I'm saying is that this idea of giving training, whether it's English language training or training in counter-terrorism, that's the sort of stuff we've been doing for a long time. Fiji, for example, we've now restored defence cooperation with Fiji, and the list goes on. And some of these initiatives go right back to the Colombo Plan. We were controversially assisting Thailand with police training and what have you on the Colombo Plan. So in this region, I think the heavy lifting expected of us on this sort of stuff as part of our alliance relationships, interestingly, it was in the press yesterday about the link to the United States and our security role. Well, a key part of our security role is this type of heavy lifting in this region. And the reason we would maintain the links at a time when others are a bit more distant may be explained by the fact that it is our neighbourhood, although you could say that Myanmar, that's a little bit beyond our traditional neighbourhood. Maybe that's more linked to the anti-China strategy. And our involvement in Myanmar has really coincided with the diminution of China's influence there.
Yeah, right. So I guess you did mention strategy then. So I'm guessing this move has a lot to do with strategy. And what else could be the potential reasons that Australia has decided not to cut the ties?
Well, you're talking about strategy, and by definition, you start with the Defence White Paper. It's defence that's driving this, and it's defence to defence relationships. And we've had some pretty ugly relationships, controversially. We were working with Kopassus, the Indonesian Special Forces, at a time when there were all sorts of question marks about their role in killings, militia violence in Indonesia. So the fact that it's in our neighbourhood would be the expedient, you know, the hard-headed, realistic assessment that we've got to sort of maintain these links. Some language goes along the line that by having this interoperable relationship with the military, you can sort of civilise them a little bit. You can sort of induct them into the norms of how professional military officers should be behaving. And that tends to play a fair bit. So that's what you're doing. You're dealing with some pretty ugly customers, but you are trying to ensure that the military behaves itself, if I could put it in those terms.
Yeah. So how do you think that actually makes Australia look on the world stage, talking to these ugly customers?
Well, one of the, I don't know if this is a blessing or not, the world tends to see us as under the radar. When we went into Iraq, for example, in 2003, I was amazed at the number of reports that left us out of the equation. Didn't seem to think we were there. Certainly, groups, Amnesty International, for example, have come out very strongly and condemned this, and others, coming out saying, well, at what point is enough enough? And as the Guardian piece that's initiated a lot of this has made clear, this is beyond the pale. You know, when you get this level of ethnic cleansing, which the United Nations labels it, and also, I'd add to that, why Burma? Why Myanmar? The relationship there has been, in my view, largely associated with this narrative now about the Indo-Pacific, you know, that there's this line of states from India to Japan lined up against China, and with China losing out in recent years to the West, the fact that the Burmese, for example, said, well, we're not going to have the dam in the north and what have you, meant that there was an opportunity to move in there. So I can see that Australia is sort of one of the links that's been maintained when others are sort of temporarily taking a much more strident view.
Do you think that we're seriously aiming to train their military with good intentions, or do you think we're kind of just going in there, turning a blind eye to what the...
Oh, no. Well, this is one of our key jobs. It has been for a while. If you look at our role in Afghanistan, to also in Iraq, but certainly in Afghanistan, you look at our role in the Solomons, in Fiji, and certainly in Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, this military-to-military training... And also drawing on a lot of experience now from the Middle East, you know, our special force capability, but what they used to call military operations other than war. In other words, you interact and you operate with foreign militaries within the region with a view to standardising approaches. Now, sometimes with equipment, you've seen this recently with Timor-Leste, trying to get them to look to Australia for the supply of naval craft and what have you. As a sort of a strategic partnership. In Indonesia itself, the suggestion that if they got on well with Capacitas, and Capacitas is the most influential military organisation in the country, maybe bit by bit that's going to lead to some leverage. Imperceptible and maybe counterproductive in some respects, but that's been the strategy to ensure that the military at least understand what a professional military network looks like. And tying it to weapons training and a whole range of other things, intelligence sharing, you've got some levers there to ensure that the military does learn to play the game. The problem with Myanmar, of course, is that the military's been so isolated.
Yeah, right.
And the law unto itself. So you're really going into a fairly fraught area. It's not the first time Australia's done that, you know, going into really difficult situations in World War One with the London Poles on the Palestine issue. We've trodden some pretty desperate diplomatic issues in the past, but this one, as you say, coming at the end of such a high-profile problem with the Rohingya, I think people are rightly saying, well, maybe this time it's a step too far. And in terms of the China policy, well, we're sort of pretty actively trying to associate ourselves with a much more aggressive China policy, certainly after the 2016 white paper. But maybe it's time to back off that as well.
Yeah, right. As you said, the Australian military does have a great experience of training other militaries around the world. Do you think the training will be effective for the Tatmadaw in achieving its goal, in aligning them to act professional military?
Well, you've got an easier question. That is a huge question, because they are a force under themselves.
Right.
They have enormous influence in Myanmar, despite what has happened with Aung San Suu Kyi. The concern about internal violence, and also this issue seems to have a fair bit of popular support. You know, the Rohingya being a Muslim group, and a lot of the potential for sectarian violence, the military wouldn't find themselves that often on the side of a lot of opinion in Myanmar, but on this one there might be a passive level of support that wasn't there in the past.
Yeah, right. Well, all we can hope is that the training is effective, and that the scrutinisation and the potential carrying out of ethnic cleansing is kind of...
I guess, James, the key thing is what's our diplomatic position, because I understand from the Guardian piece, the Minister of Defence has condemned the killing of soldiers, but has been less than forthright in her condemnation of what's happened to the Rohingya.
Yeah.
So it's one thing to say, well, the military can do the dirty work, if you like, and maintain these links all the time, trying to professionalise the relationship and also bring them into our strategic orbit. And it's more a regional thing. While we've had a presence in Africa and Middle East and what have you in the past, this is very much a sense that this is our neighbourhood. To the extent that there's a debate now for the military is, well, what do you mean by the region? You know, does the region go as far as Myanmar? I think a lot of strategists in the Australian community would be questioning that.
Yeah, right. It's going to be very interesting to see how this pans out over the next couple of months and possibly years. Thank you so much, Professor, for talking to us this morning.
No, my pleasure.